Now, with respect to inflation, we've had a good deal of talk in the last week particularly, and a number of statements to the effect that the inflation problem is not being handled by the new program. Probably the simplest number to look at is that in the 6 months since the new program started, the consumer price index rose at an annual rate of 3.3%. For the new program, the 4.1%. If you look at commodities other than food, and I'll talk about food in a moment, the increase in the 6 months since the new program started was at an annual rate of 0.9%, whereas it had been at an annual rate of 3.7% in the 6 months before the previous started. Mr. Buchwald had some fun with me this morning for saying that we could look at the consumer price index excluding food. I think that's a column he probably rose between the fourth and fifth course of his lunch at San Susi. But in any case, the reason for saying that we can look at the numbers excluding food is that food does follow a pattern of its own. It has a life of its own. It's very volatile, as its prices are very volatile, as you all know. And we have reason to think that the price of food will not rise nearly so rapidly in the rest of the year as it has up to the milk. Prices of hogs have been coming down, and wholesale prices of choice beer wholesale have been coming down. And this points to a leveling out of meat prices in the stores in the future. We have some recent evidence in February and March of a wash of retail margins for meat, and Secretary Connolly has invited 12 of the leading chain stores to meet with him in his office tomorrow afternoon for a little talk on that subject. Some people, including Senator Humphrey, have made a big point of the fact that the rate of increase of the consumer price index in the 3 months after the freeze was 4.9% annual rate, and he calls this up as a great evidence of the unfair the ball on prices, and was largely due to the food price increase. But also, as we had forecast, there was a considerable bulge in wages, and in those same three months when the consumer price index rose at an annual rate of 4.9%, wages rose at an annual rate of 8.3%, which is certainly no evidence of the unfairness of the program, as has recently been charged. In fact, probably the best measure, there are really two important measures of the significance of the program for working people. One is that in the 6 months since the program started, real weekly earnings, real, that is real, adjusted for cost of living, after tax, rose at an annual rate of 5.6%, whereas in the previous 6 months, they rose at an annual rate of only 1.2%. And probably an even more important measure is that this program has for one of its main objectives, enabling us to push the economy up more rapidly, about expansion, and to increase employment. And since the program started from August to February, which are the latest figures we have, total employment increased by 1.1 million. Now, certainly for those workers, this program has been a great positive. And we have in that period reduced the number unemployed by about 200, as I have said. We're confident we will continue to reduce the unemployment rate. So I think we have a very strong story. It's a story that's a little hard to get through the media curtain, but let's keep it on that.
What was that real weekly wage figure 6 months before her?
1.2%. I'm going to make a distribution. Well, I have some figures which are about 3 days out of date. I was going to send them to Forty. He would ask for a fact sheet, a set that would be up to date for today. But these figures that I do have a handout, which does include the latest CPI. I also have copies of a little thing, a summary that I wrote a couple of weeks ago, a shorter version of which appeared in the New York Times, where they left out my final sentence, that we must not allow the frustrations of many years to enslave us to a new law, which might be called O'Brien's Law, that no good news is possible. Pass out copies of that.
Mr. President, I think we make a mistake talking so much about an annualized rate in the economy since August has gone up 1.4%. And our economic arguments ought to be based on August always, because that's when the program began. And if you say that the cost of living since the beginning of this program has gone up 1.4%, it has a lot of impact on people. Humphrey was saying the other day on television that it's up 5% since then. What he's talking about is an annualized rate. The annualized rate isn't even that high, but
what's the annualized
rate? Yeah, really, it's a little
bit here. That's part of the base, too, is the
well, I think we need to just point. We make a mistake on the annualized rate.
The point that I carry on this guy's hand is that, George, you've always emphasized that the real wage is gone. That is, if you increase the real wage, we had a period of about, 1971, where all the wage increases, there was no real increase in wage. It was very dynamic. Well, the independent, I mean, you asked this or that. So my, our system, overall, you can generally make that statement that there's hardly any or no increase in real wage. But the significant thing about the last 6 months, there's been a real increase in real wages. That's right, Jordan.
There's been a long period of very little change broken out now for the first time since 1968.
Clearly, talk about the back part. We had these wonderful wage increases during the 66, 67, 68, but it was no real increase in wages because price increases ate up. Now we have finally stopped that. And looking at the 80 million wage earners, and since the August 15th move, we have our first really substantial increase in real wages. Is that correct?
President, I talked the first time, and we will get the one page that you caught up on. This is very important. It has to be the Republican County.
One, and also the Republican Senator.
Can we get it today,
Brian? Republican Senator.
Can we get it today, you think?
Yes, yeah, they're going to
be shutting it. Yeah, we'll be late tonight. We'll have time to get it out.
This would be up. This is something where you just get those numbers down. I use it for example. I'm always on current impression. We have a few of those, and just snap them right off there. Because when you run down the number, the rate of inflation has been cut, the interest rates are down, and incidentally, can I suggest one line, which I think is very important to take with regard to food prices. You can't get into the business of defending high food prices. You can't get into the business also of on the other side of the coin of saying, well, it's because the farmer is excellent. The line, which is a very simple one, is that only a third of the cost, basically, approximately a third of what the housewife pays in the supermarket or the grocery store goes to the farmer. And so it is not that third that really causes a rise in food prices. It's the two-thirds. Farm income was too low, good. But the real culprits here are not the farmers. The farmers shouldn't be made the same. The culprits are the middlemen and the retailers. Now, check them. You say some of them are be out there, too. That's all right. They need some service. Because their profit margins have gone up. And that's why Conley's having them in. He's inviting them. But the invitation is to command performance, I can assure you. But I think we got to be on the side that we don't like high food prices. We're against them, but we're going after that too. But obviously, we can't control farm prices for reasons that they are so subject to fluctuation. And you can say that you're, don't put us in a position where we're just defending the high food price. George, you want to say, tell us a little about the wage board and how it's going to work now?
When does the next unemployment figure come out?
I think the main thing is that the president said in his statement, fighting inflation is everybody's job. George Meany walked off the job. Not very many people walked off with it. He took his AFL-CIO members and Leonard Woodcock off with him. Some of the presidential candidates walked off, particularly Hubert Humphrey. But the Teamsters stayed on the board. The construction union members of the construction industry stabilization commission stayed on their committee. And the overwhelming response around the country in terms of editorials or policy or one thing and another of that sort is in support of making the program work. Now, a transition was made, and we thought and considered the possibility all along that the labor people might walk off the board, so it was not as though it was a shocking thing. A transition was made from the concept of a tripartite wage board, which is what we wanted to have, which I think has served a purpose in setting the 5.5% standard and getting some acceptance of that and so forth. Was away from that to an all-public board. We do have a labor member on the board, Frank Fitzsimmons of the Teamsters, and a business member of the board, Rocco Siciliano, you know. But the idea is they are, so to speak, public representatives with particular areas of expertise. And so the general concept of that board has been changed. I think that the charges that Meany made, that somehow the pay board was operated without adequate participation by the labor members, is just demonstrably wrong on its face when you look at the actions of the board in the first place. I think most people have, they've had criticisms of the wage stabilization effort. It's been much too lenient. But beyond that, just in terms of the vote, they've had 54 sort of main decisions they voted on. 36 times labor has voted in agreement with a majority. In 13 of the cases, that's 25%, they voted against. They abstained 4 times, split once. But on 5 of the 8 major issues that were identified, they were on the winning side. So they have participated, and they have gotten their way, and I think in the eyes of many people have gotten their way more often than was a good idea. The Longshore case, West Coast Longshore case, was the one that at least provided the occasion for their walk-off. That was a case where the union called for a 20.6% increase in the first year. The pay board allowed, because of productivity, because of the fact that they had gotten behind the cost of living on a 5-year contract, allowed 14.9%, which is miles above the general standard. But this cut it back significantly from the level that they agreed to, and all the labor people voted against that. I might say that we have let it be known that the administration intends to support the pay board's decision. And, we haven't heard anything from the West Coast. I have continued to work, and just what kind of response they'll have remains to be seen. So our position has been quiet but resolved, and people know that we're here and we need business. Now, I think that one of the interesting things here has to do with the Crippling Strikes Act. And Bob mentioned, well, is it better to have it passed or not passed? Well, we'd like to have it passed because it's constructive legislation. But it's very apparent that one of the principal reasons why there is no strike on the West Coast right now is that labor people fear that if they again shut down the coast, if they again shut down the transportation system, that there is going to be a
possibility of that act is talked about, the more nervous they are, and the more unlikely it is that we're going to have a big upset here. So that act is playing its part, whether it's passed or not. It's kind of a string. That is an important thing. Just on the background of the wage stabilization price program, of course, the cases that you read about are the ones that are big requests for major exceptions of one kind or another. And the sort of routine work of the Price Commission and the Pay Board is little noticed. So if you ask yourself, of all of the wage changes that must be reported to the board and pre-notified to the board before they can be approved, what is a, so to speak, weighted average of the amount? It comes out to be slightly less than 5%. So you read about the long-term and you read about aerospace and so forth. But just take the run-of-the-mill, average it all in, and it's slightly less than 5%. So that is a significant reduction from the problem that we have been having. And I think it suggests that this process was having an impact, and a constructive impact. On the price side, in terms of all applicable sales, that is, if you take company proposals, and then what the Price Commission ruled, and compare the amount of increase with the total sales of that company, the price increases approved amount to 1.6%. So there is a area of application there. Herb has covered Consumer's Price Index. I would go over that, but I think the message here is, in terms of the Economic Stabilization Program, that it has been a working mechanism, it has been achieving results, it has set forward standards, it is processing cases, and we have this challenge of the labor people. It was met quickly. And the board is reconstituted, it's a business, its rules and regulations are in effect. The whole thing is proceeding. Now, one further point that is, I think, quite a valid point, sort of a favorite of mine, but which I think is a good thing for us. We have put this stabilization program into a situation where we had a lot of room for expansion of the economy before you ran into the kind of very tight markets that would pull wages and prices up from the demand side. That being the case, it's possible to have a strong expansion without regenerating demand inflation. And a strong expansion almost guarantees a strong improvement in productivity. Now, we're having, as Herb said, a strong expansion. We will have a strong improvement in productivity. And that, operating against an average wage change of, let's say, 5% or so, we get the productivity change up above 4%. The labor cost picture is in hand. And just keeping a little damper on this thing, it's quite possible to have a strong expansion, a strong rise in employment, a decline in unemployment, and more stable prices through the way this mechanism operates. So I think we're sitting in a good position. The mechanism that's put in place seems to be operating pretty well, and the price has responded. It's responded in part to the control mechanism. It's also responded to the underlying processes that are at work and which are favoring a successful operation of the program, both in terms of the inflation and in terms, in many ways more important, expansion of the economy.
I think you could say it this way, George, to the controls in beef side will not work if you are going against the tide over any period of time. The controls in beef side will work if you happen, as we are in the present time, to be going with the tide. Because if we were in a period when you had a high demand inflation as well as on the other side, no amount of controls would pop up, bust out through all the things.
Right. I think that's the reason why we have to keep our eye on things like what John Rhodes was talking about. If we wind up having created a situation where a year from now, the budget is hopelessly out of control, and we will have gotten the economy to expand and so forth, we won't be able to contain the inflation, and we'll have to go through another very painful kind of experience. The thing is to keep our heads about us now, not allow things like that bypassing of the Appropriations Committee to take place.
The control mechanism will be effective at this period, but at a later period, the traditional forces, the conventional forces of fiscal policy will have a massive effect. And that's the reason the decisions we make now on this fiscal side can have an enormous effect next year. And when all the controls in the world won't be able to stop it.
So we're fighting
some of these budget items and so.
Well, we're standing and we've proposed a budget that has plenty of deficit in it. But at the same time, we have to realize that that's built for the times. And when the expansion goes forward, we get a little bit further along, and effort will be in turn correct.
Could I suggest one point before we break up with regard to this whole effort? Mainly is to be on the right side of the issue. People are never satisfied with the prices in the grocery store and that sort of thing. And prices are always too high. It's always hard to keep the budget so long.
The main thing is to be fighting it.
And of course being effective is something we would like to be also, but we think this year will be a year when we're effective.
But even where we're effective, it appears we're on the wrong side.
You're dead politically. So we've got to be fighting the rise in the cost of living, whether it's food prices or anything else. We've also got to be fighting the battle of against unemployment and sit back and say, well, it's a little better than it was and so forth. So that's the position you want to be in. Now, on the, with regard to the rise in the cost of living, we come back to the confrontation. Meaning, without putting it in personal terms, I think we should realize that there is no necessity for any of you who have to go back and actually you have to make an appeal to union members to the extent that you can. And the workers, many of whom have sympathy with union members, just an empathy because they are all wage earners in that cut. There's no reason why you can't be totally on their side and yet totally against me. Because basically, the idea that here is a man, a powerful man, but who's out of step with his members, out of step with the country, out of step with what this nation needs, I think this is a powerful point. Stenlinger, who does economic polling, has indicated that since this last flare-up meeting that 75% overall of the people, including the majority of union members, side with the president and not with me on this particular matter. The point that I make is this, I don't think any of you should be afraid from a political standpoint to take on those who have been so irresponsible to, as a fact, walk off the job of fighting inflation, and take on those candidates who say, we'll walk off, we'll throw up our hand, we won't do it. Because in this instance, they're out of step with their own people, want it for them. Now, in order for that, however, to sail, you have to knock down the arguments of the Humphreys and others that the program hasn't worked. It has worked. Because you compare the first, the 6 months since life to the 6 months before, you see a substantial cut in the rise in the cost of living. And going ahead, we believe that that's going to be the situation in the future. But I think the main point is that it isn't just making it work, but we have to be on the right side of the issue. We're fighting it, and the others are obstructing for political reasons, for partisan reasons, for whatever reasons, or for selfish reasons. And I think certainly in the long term, if you need a scapegoat, it's a lot a better scapegoat than the farmers. As far as the long term are concerned,
I think we just flatly say that a 20% wage increase for West Coast longshoremen is too much. And the pay board was right, meaning we're wrong.
Correct. And you've got a very powerful issue there. I think in terms of audience reactions, you might use it.
Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
Captain Paul George, I don't know how many caught John Conley the other morning on the day show, but he made a beautiful statement. He said, well, of course, we hate to see Mr. Meany leave the pay board, but actually, the only meeting he attended was the first one when his own pay increase was up.
Possible that the one of the reasons food prices are up is because of the wages of people who work in the process. In other words, is organized labor partly responsible for this work?
Well, I would imagine the continuing increase, particularly.
Put it on the butcher,
but you know, some guy.
Nobody has a clue.
This one is you, right? You said a forest out
on that.
But our information is, and we have got this to the point where we're ready to talk about it, because it's not quite that solid. But the general impression you get from looking at figures is the margins have grown a little as the volume has grown. The profits have gone up quite a lot, mostly the whole middleman area. And that does give an area to work in. At the same time, underlying it is the basic raw agricultural product price. And that has had a rise, but it has been tapering off in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on the product you're talking about. So we think that the chances are, with a little perhaps some arm twisting with the retailer and the continuation of this underlying price trend, that the food price area will stabilize out for us. And if the rest of it stays the way it is, we're golden. It really is a good looking situation.
Let me just use one little Conley story, because you're talking to chicken farmers, and people about chicken farmers, so I guess around John Williamson here anymore. But John Conley was pointing out at the public council meeting the other day that he's, you know, down in Texas, and he always goes around silk competition. You know, I'm talking to one of my neighbors there, and he raises chickens. Sells eggs. I says, what do you get for him? He says, well, he's going to sell them about a dollar for 3 dozen. He says, you can get about 30 cents a dozen. Yeah. He says, yeah, a few days later, he says, I'm at Pierre Hotel, and I ordered 2 eggs. You know, no bacon, nothing. I just wanted 2 eggs for breakfast. He says, it cost me $5. He says, that's $30 a dozen. He says, now 30 cents a dozen to the farmer, $30 a dozen in the Pierre Hotel. That's too much of a difference.
I agree.
Yeah.